on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Oh, dude, there's my basket. Jess, is this thing on, dude?
Are the Dodgers ruining the National Basketball Association is the question we have to ask today. Because, I mean, look, this is obviously a baseball pod, but my Lord, one of the craziest trades went down last night. We're going to talk about it a little bit in MLB terms. But first, Brandon Bollinger, I'm happy to be back with you. Sorry to everybody that we're like a couple days late on when we normally record. Normally we're like Saturday mornings, but things got pushed back a little bit this week. But we are back on Deferred Collusion. Brandon, how are you, buddy?
Jesse, we're back, baby. Ah, it feels good. Yeah. To get into another episode of Deferred Collusion with you, the host with the most, my man, Jesse James, the unbeatable Roe, as they call him out there in Crespi, none other than your boy, Brandon Bollinger. Please don't forget to like us, subscribe us. You feel like engaging with us on anything, hit us in the comments. We'll talk to you back. But yeah. Jess, unprecedented trade, dude. Some people are saying this is the worst trade in NBA history. Started getting me kicking the tires a little bit on just, you know, LA is just no good for sports in any league, it seems. But, Jess, it started to make me think about some of the worst trades in my lifetime, right? Or at least perceived. For me, I go straight to Hall of Famer Pedro Martinez being traded from the Dodgers to the Montreal Expos for none other than slick-named Delino DeShields. One of my favorite names in baseball, but yeah, my God, it was terrible. I remember feeling like a kid in the 90s. It was like any Dodger player that we like draft and develop is going to become a star, but for another team, you know, like a Piazza to the Mets, like shit like that. But Jess, how you feeling about this, dude? This it's exciting times for my Laker family.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of Laker fans that watch this, Dodgers and Lakers. We obviously share the same town. This has kind of become a little bit of a Dodger town the past 5 or 6 years. I know LeBron James is in town, but, you know, it just hasn't, you know, since winning in 2020, Lakers have kind of been a little all over the place, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But, like, you made the Delino to Shields comparison. It's obviously not a comparison, but like the difference, but why that's not like nearly even close to like a bad trade compared to this is because nobody really knew what Pedro Martinez was going to be at the time when he was traded. Whereas like everybody knows who Luka Doncic is, right? Like he's the third best player objectively in the NBA right now.
And some like, might say top five.
Yeah. In 25 years old in his prime, you have him for like the next decade, possibly. It just resets the Lakers timeline in a crazy way that it's obviously Anthony Davis is an amazing player, but it's so shocking that I literally last night I'm on my phone. I had a couple of beers and it just popped up on my phone and I started sharing it to people because I was just like my heart started racing. I didn't know what.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was real. It was a Sham Sharania tweeted it out, and then I start seeing Shams hacked as like a trending thing on Twitter. And so I thought like, oh no, I'm sending a fake tweet to everybody. Like I had to go back and text everybody and say, hey, actually, I think it might be fake, you know, cause it was just so baffling when it happened. But, hey, it's exciting times, but you know, you have to think about this. This is a baseball pod. So you have to think about this from like baseball terms here. And I don't know if, The Pedro trade might be like the worst in Dodgers history from like a standpoint of like what we had versus what we gave away and just not being able to project our talent properly.
Mm.
But where do you think, what do you think the comp is for a trade like this in baseball terms? Like if you're not an NBA fan and you don't know, how would you explain it to somebody? Like, because I've seen a lot of these going around and I think it's so unprecedented that it's really hard to do, but it might be a fun exercise for us.
Honestly, and I'm not kidding. Like, I don't know that there is a like a comp that just comes to mind off the top, because AD, you know, while oft injured, is one of the most dominant defensive players in the league today. You know, 32, I believe. So, you know, not ancient, but getting up there in NBA years. And the Mavs felt like they needed a defensive shift. You know, I know Luka was getting called out a lot for conditioning and his defensive play in the finals. So I guess maybe there's got to be more to it, right? There's got to be something behind the scenes that they didn't finals. Like. because it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, it's not the same, but it does remind me of like a Mookie trade to the Dodgers in 19, you know, with David Price. It's a salary dump, bunch of young talent going to the Red Sox, but kind of nothing over the top, right? Like, okay, like, yeah, it's something, like 80 something, but you like you just said about the Lakers with Luka, they're set up for the next 5-10 years maybe. Whereas AD, I mean, what is he gonna get another supermax contract, or I don't know. But look, this is all with a salary cap, and you know, much like football with a salary cap, a lot of the same teams are ending up in the dance year after year. Maybe the Lakers are gonna try and end that drought, you know what I mean? Get back into some dominant form. But you know, we'll see how Luka and Bronny Jr. team up together. It can be powerful.
Oh my god.
That's enough basketball talk, dude. I'm barely 5'8.5-ish, so I've never been able to.
Well, let me say this.
I'll be honest with you.
I think, like, I like the Mookie comp only because, like, the Red Sox were willingly putting Mookie out there. Like, they voluntarily started shopping him, because there might be a financial element to this where I think Luka was, like, eligible for a supermax extension, which would have been, like, $350 million or something like
now
that.
Now he's not.
And now he's not. And that might be the reason why, but I think it's more so that, like, something was going on behind the scenes with them that, like, they just were, like, fed up with Luka, which, you know, might not be great for the Lakers, but, like, you'd hope that in the clubhouse with LeBron, they can change that a little bit. But anyways, about baseball, I think that the, like, only comp that I saw that, like, kind of made some sense was, like, trading, like, Bobby Witt Jr. To get Mike Trout, you know, and the only reason why it's not the same is because, like, Trout, like, historically is on a higher plane than Anthony Davis is. So, like, you're still getting, like, a higher ceiling with Trout. But
yeah,
that's kind of what it feels like. A guy who's injured a lot, hasn't played a lot, when he's on the floor is one of the best players in the league, but, like, also is old, and you don't really have a future necessarily with them. Whereas, like, Bobby Witt Jr. and Luka Doncic, it's like you have a franchise player for the next 10 years.
That
could be like one of the top three or four players in the game. So that would be what it would most likely match up to. But then again, the Mavericks were like just in the finals last year and they made this move. So that's.
I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like the Mavs are acting like fucking Luka is goddamn Anthony Rendon, dude. Like, he's just like, this guy doesn't want to be there, you know?
Like, dude, I was thinking about this, though. It actually feels like this is a move, like, because I've sort of tuned out a little bit of the Lakers over the past few years, because I've gotten a little turned off by them, just like the way that the front office is operated. And I've been so disillusioned by how good the Dodgers have been operated the past, like, 6, 7, or 8 years, just how well run they've been. And, this was like a move where I'm like, oh, this is what Andrew Friedman would do. He wouldn't let a player dictate what moves they're going to make. Because I think the Lakers have sort of been a little bit like run by Clutch Sports and LeBron. And he's, you know, led GM, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is something that Friedman would have done. But I don't want to give Pelinka that much credit, because the Mavericks just like, they broke into the Lakers' house and they left $1 million. They didn't rob anything. They left $1 million. You know what I mean? So it's like, I can't give the Lakers like too much credit for pulling this off, because it just seems like the Mavericks were just willing to give it away. So whatever.
Yeah. No, I dig that. I think that's a fair one, but, hey, LA, City of Champions, they're coming for my Kansas City, title, you know, that's
still a Dodger town, still a Dodger town.
It is officially a Dodger town, and the Lakers, you know, this is, I think, their first move in this generation to try and retake the title.
Look, if they're back, it's a Laker town, but, like, until they win again, Dodger town.
I'm I don't think it's a Lakers town anymore, dude. I think the Shohei era has cemented that LA is a Dodger town right now. And speaking of the Dodgers, I guess this might highlight the plethora of talent or depth that they have right now.
Yeah.
I've spoken about Ryan Brazier, the reclamation project. You know, I think he was DFA'd from the Red Sox in 2023, or maybe was placed on waivers of some kind.
I don't remember. Yeah.
But yeah, he wasn't performing well, and then comes to the Dodgers and pitches over the last two seasons to a sub-2 ERA. Only had 3 blown saves in 2024. Dodger fans might remember him giving up a bomb to, I think, Stanton in game 5.
Yeah, it was like the fourth inning. Yeah,
and a bomb to Francisco Lindor in the first inning of game 2 of the
All we needed was one out to break the scoreless streak, by the way, the all-time playoff scoreless streak. We needed one fucking out, Ryan Brazier, and you gave up a goddamn solo homer. But whatever.
Well, it's like when Hershiser had that crazy scoreless inning streak in, I think it was 88, that went through the playoffs. And then he started in 89 and gave up like a home run or something in the first inning of the first. It's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Just flip that. We got to. But that's just baseball, right? That's just like how baseball juju works out. But Ryan, World Series champ with the Dodgers, absolute stud.
I mean, look, listen to this. Sub-2 ERA over his 2 years with the Dodgers. Like you mentioned, he only had how many blown? He barely had any blown saves. He was really fucking good, man. And it just shows where the Dodgers are at in terms of what they have on the roster and guys that they also have coming up that they want to get some playing time for, you know, so it makes sense. But like the fact that they couldn't trade Brazier, that they had to DFA him, he's still eligible for a trade, but it's just your leverage is totally gone now. Totally. Says to me, like, teams were just kind of like, we're not going to fucking help you offload the guys you don't need anymore. You already have enough. Like, we're not going to trade. We're not going to work with you on a Ryan Brazier trade. Like, if we know you're going to release him, the Dodgers, it's hard for them to have a poker face in situations like this, you know?
I think that's a really good point, man. Because there's a lot of teams that Ryan Brazier makes sense for, and not least of all, little brother to the South, the San Diego Padres. We'll talk about them a little bit. They also had their fan fest this weekend. As did our boys in blue, the Los Angeles Dodgers. But man, it's a move that I think we were kind of expecting, right? We knew that there was going to have to be some responses to signing fucking every top free agent this offseason. And speaking of a couple of guys that are still remaining unsigned, Andrew Friedman and GM Brandon Gomes. Gomes is the GM and Friedman is the president of baseball operations, correct? Right?
Gomes is, I love this conversation, by the way, because this is sort of what I was always thinking when like Farhan Zaidi was with the Dodgers, because obviously there were like 2 years where after Zaidi left, there was no GM. It was just Andrew Friedman as the president of baseball operations. So to me, it's Friedman and then it's like his assistant. Brandon Gomes.
Yeah. What it means, so. Yeah.
I think you're right. Back to Brandon Gomes. I'm just saying, like, this is an Andrew Friedman operation. You know, make no mistake about it. So, but no, Brandon Gomes. Yeah, sorry.
But he had mentioned that Kershaw's working on a throwing program, and they fully expect him to be back with the team. So it sounds like they're waiting for that maybe like 40 man to open up. They put him on the IL or something like that. Yeah. And it sounds like the same thing with Kike. They came straight out and said that. You know, it's pretty much balls in his court, but the door is always open for Kike Hernandez to return to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that just feels right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what do you do, though? Because it's – I still think there are, like, roster spots that would, like, need to open up for this to happen. I mean, I'm looking at the 40-man roster here. And, you know, there's just not a lot of guys that you could release – I mean, Chris Taylor feels like an obvious choice.
And we've been saying that for a minute, that I think CT's, you know, got to be.
Yeah, I just because, I mean, if they want to bring Kike back, it makes sense because he's such a clubhouse guy, but he's also an October performer. And that's what we really care about, right, is our guys that are like that can line up versatility, position, flexibility. that also produce in the playoffs, and you want to have him back, but I'm like, where is the room on this team to even make this signing? Like, somebody has to go, somebody has to get traded. Like, James Outman, is he going to be packaged into a trade of some kind, you know, for like a minor leaguer that won't be on the 40 man, you know, that sort of thing.
So,
obviously I want Kike back, man. I think the Dodgers
definitely
need a guy like Kike, but I just, you know, we signed Hyesung Kim. Where does he, we have Chris Taylor? Where does he fit on the roster right now? Something has to happen in order for him to come back on board. So
yeah, and I know there'll be some sort of finagling around with Shohei being a two-way player versus a one-way player. You know, early on
that
in
helps.
The year.
That helps.
Yeah, because I believe Dave Roberts was saying they're expecting Shohei to pitch in May. Which I think is still plenty early to get his feet under him. But Jess, do you think that this may eliminate him from being like maybe a full starter this year? Maybe just kind of going like 4 or 5 a game, if that?
No, I think he's going to be, I think we're going to see them handle him with like kids gloves for the first like month or two. Like, you know, he'll be like ramped up from like 3 innings to 4 innings. He'll be going 6 or 7. If he's pitching well, he'll be going 6 or 7 innings, which does sort of like lead into the conversation that I want to have here, because I want to get more into the Shohei pitching stuff, because with all of these moves that the Dodgers are making, DFAing Brazier feels like a luxury for them, right? Because they're so good. Mm-hmm. That they can do something like that. It feels like there's just not a bad roster spot here. It feels like the expectations have probably never been higher for any baseball team in history. I think you'd probably
definitely
that. Like,
oh
yeah, there's never been expectations like this, because there's no flaw on the team. They are expected to win or it's a failure. So I'm thinking, what do you think could go wrong for the Dodgers this year? Like, what if the Dodgers don't win the World Series, or have like, if they don't meet expectations, like they don't win 100 games, like what do you think would have to go wrong in order for that to happen?
Well, man, I think the easiest answer, right, is just the low hanging fruit. So I'll just acknowledge it, but just injury, right? The injury bug keeps creeping. You know, you don't get any length out of Sasaki or Yamamoto or Ohtani or Glasnow. And you're kind of just left with a bunch of guys recovering from injury and Blake Snell, you know? So there's that. But more realistically, I think, is just guys simply regress a little bit. Look at the World Series hangover that the Texas Rangers had. That was a team that was all mojo, all momentum, and just slugged you to death, right? Well, you know, hitting's kind of contagious.
And
so
injuries.
When somebody, and injuries, Seager missed a ton of the year. I think Chapman was, or not Aroldis Chapman, but fucking Adolis Garcia was dealing with some stuff. You know, that's kind of the core of your lineup. So, you know, I'll just follow it a little bit. Freddie is going to be late to starting his routine after getting surgery on his foot or an ankle this offseason. You know, some other host of injuries that he dealt with. So there's that. Guys like Tony Gonsolin or Gavin Stone or Kershaw or whatever, some of these talented depth arms don't come back. You know, maybe the
Stone's out for the year.
All right. Well, maybe like Emmett Sheehan or Dustin May, if I didn't mention him already. But yeah, so there's that. But in terms of regression, guys maybe like Teoscar or Muncy, you know, like I mentioned, Freeman, or, you know, Will Smith had some struggles in the postseason. Maybe offensively he continues to struggle as he gets a little older each year. Maybe Mookie doesn't find his offensive legs under him while trying to navigate shortstop. Maybe Tommy Edman regresses. You know, there's a lot, I think, that you can...
Sure.
As great as the Dodgers are on paper, I think you can come up with just as many holes in that paper by just following guys' kind of trajectories. That said, I've mentioned earlier, you know, in other episodes, like, that the Dodgers developmentally and everything else is, you know, while each part is fantastic, the sum is greater than its parts. And I think that's even That's the same with the Dodgers, even though they're a star-studded lineup. I think a lot of it has to do with guys' work ethic, right? Like Mookie's a leader in one way because he's like a day-to-day grinder, where Freddie's kind of similar in that he's a day-to-day grinder, but works a little bit different. Same thing with Shohei. Guys like Teoscar, Kershaw, of course, just kind of set the tone. So when you're a younger guy, or even a guy maybe like Glasnow or Snell, that have been the guys elsewhere, they can kind of sit back, do their work, and lead by example. And I think that all kind of helps. You know, it's like when you take care of the pennies, the dollars take care of themselves. And
No.
so that's I think that's the kind of like yin and yang of this little what if scenario we're playing
Right.
out.
And I think that, like, it's obviously injury has to be the answer. I mean, we're coming off of a season where the Dodgers, like, had one of the worst luck with injury seasons you'll ever see and still won the World Series. So, like, the Dodgers are built to withstand the injury bug, and they'll always be in on trades at the deadline if like guys go down or whatever. But you know, like we were talking about Shohei pitching, that to me is like one of these factors here, because you have to, because they're probably going to go with like a 6-man rotation, which some of these guys are not used to, right? And then Shohei's only going to be pitching like, you know, 3 innings at a time at to start, and he's also not pitching until May. So like automatically for the first month of the season, like one of these aces that you have isn't even pitching, and he might not even be pitching a full load until like the second half of the season. And there's it's totally possible that Shohei Ohtani's not the same pitcher he was when he comes back, which is another big thing. And you
I
know.
almost think that that might start kind of becoming the norm, is that the first half of the season is just kind of used now to ramp up these starting pitchers. It's like, you know what? You're throwing a 96 mile an hour slider, you know, and a fucking 100 mile an hour heater. It's like maybe we should take a little time to get there. And you know, if October is when it counts, that's when you make all your real money, right? All the extra bread. But it's tough. It's tough because injuries is such like a unavoidable and like really nasty part of the game right now, where, you know, we've talked about this on other episodes, but all your favorite players are just, it seems like, gone for 3 months out of the year, from, you know, Bryce Harper blowing his knee out, or, you know, freaking Mookie broke his hand, or whatever. I go on forever, baby. But
No, and I think
pitchers, it's terrible, man. We want to see our guys doing stuff like magical stuff on the mound, not fucking, you know, going under the knife.
yeah, and it's, you know, people, even like Glasnow, even though he didn't go under the knife, you know, ended the season with the elbow injury, couldn't even pitch in October. These scenarios are going to pop up. I mean, I think that's why the Dodgers just stocked up in pitching as much as they could, because they're like, they're expecting to use all of them kind of deal. They're anticipating like just completely utilizing every piece of roster space that they have, which I think is like why that you can DFA a guy like Brazier or whatever. I think that they have like a bigger long-term strategy in mind regarding that. And like Muncy and Freddie and these guys, they're on the other side of 30 now. You could start seeing bat speed slowing down, or regression in production. Freddie's power numbers could start to drop. The contact might still be there, but the power numbers drop. Just things like that are going to happen that I think will the Dodgers might not be this like 120 win juggernaut that people are expecting them to be. You know, a lot of things can go wrong, and also the Dodgers are going to be very careful about how they approach the season, because they have so much money invested, and they have so much depth that they'll mix and match when they need to avoid injury and all that stuff. But you know, the Shohei conversation about pitching, there's a debate about, you know, would the Dodgers be better off like not pitching? Now you have like Rowe and Yamamoto, and you know, do you see that as a possible scenario to happen here, where we might just even, well, that, do you think that conversation will start happening this year? Like, because we're going to hear that buzz eventually about like, should Shohei switch to just being a hitter? When do you think that conversation starts happening?
I don't think it happens right now. You know, he's what, 30, so maybe 34, you know, but this first year is going to be the big tell, right? Like, how can we get him back? Whatever. They said it was a complicated surgery. Still haven't called it Tommy John. But a pretty well, I guess the prominent hitter in baseball history, Barry Bonds. You may remember him as the hated ones.
Yeah.
Legend, the San Francisco Giants legend Barry Bonds had a little opinion on Shohei, and he thinks that he should stick to DH. Pretty much simply said, maybe come in as a reliever, but why mess with something that's working so well? And he's kind of got a point, right? If you got 50-50 in the bag, do you need him to come up and pitch? Like, I mean, he kind of makes a good point. Or am I just getting caught up in the juice that is Barry Bonds?
No, you're not wrong, because he's not going to steal as many bases if he's pitching. He's just not going to do it. They're not going to risk that, especially with him taking the shoulder injury, sliding into second in the World Series. You know,
good point.
Like they're not going to keep risking this with, like, he's not going to steal as many bags. So he won't be as valuable as a hitter when he's pitching. And he might take, like, more days off because of it, too. He might skip, like, a DH day, like, every seven games or something like that because of it. But I think you're right. It's probably not the conversation will start happening this year. You have to you have to try it while you have it, and then it's purely performance dependent and health dependent. That's what.
Yeah.
If he's not pitching well into like year two of pitching, then that conversation I think will start to happen. But if he's still pitching great, it's like you don't cut the horn off a unicorn, you know, when you're like, when you have it, you know what I mean? So we'll see. But, you know, the expectations have never been higher. DraftKings just set it at the win total at 103, which is the all-time highest win total that DraftKings has ever set for an MLB
team. Pretty high, dude.
And
higher than the grocery bill, brother.
So we've talked about injuries, we've talked about performance, but in terms of like what other teams can do, how the league can perform against the Dodgers, what would need to happen for other teams in order for the Dodgers not to have the season everybody's expecting them to have?
Well, I don't know that it's like, you can make an argument that if any one of, I don't know, maybe like the top five, eight teams in baseball, like if they kind of just play to the names on the back of the jerseys, that they can be real contenders to win a World Series. Obviously, the Phillies are loaded. The Braves are still super stacked. You know, depending on how Strider comes back, which I think we're all rooting for. The Yankees, I think, are still better. Maybe not as good of an offensive team as last year. I think they are going to be a better defensive team, a more well-rounded team, maybe a little bit better base running. We'll see. You know, I just said there's maybe eight teams, but I can already start to get a little thin, right? But you know what? I don't want to sleep on the Diamondbacks, dude. I know we were kind of just kicking that back and forth. Who should the Dodgers be more worried about in the division? Is it the Padres or is it the Diamondbacks? And I think the Corbin Burns addition kind of puts them over the top for me, especially with news that Dylan Cease is being shopped around and Michael King is not expected to sign an extension. We had mentioned that the Padres had their fan experience this weekend, where Manny Machado expressed his lack of enthusiasm, we'll say, with the Padres offseason, saying that he was disappointed by the lack of moves. I think Dylan Cease made a comment on trade rumors with him, just kind of saying, hey, it's part of the game, it's just business. But that's not what you want to hear after maybe getting lit up after your first start on short rest in the playoffs, you know?
Oh yeah.
Feels like they were ready to kick him out the door right there. But it's tough times in San Diego, and I think the Snakes are in a prime position to take that wild card spot in the NL.
I still think the Padres still have a very high ceiling here.
They're still great.
But they have potential for like the floor kind of falling out from underneath them more so than the Diamondbacks do at this point. Like the Diamondbacks, like, yeah, they were a wild card team in 2023. I get that. They kind of just got hot at the right time. We don't need to remember what happened and the division series that year, but you know, they did make a run to the World Series that went six games. So they were two wins away from a championship. And then last year, you know, they had the best offense in baseball and they only missed the playoffs by one game. So, and they actually improved their record too. On top of that, now they're adding Corbin Burns. They've replaced Christian Walker with Josh Naylor. The Diamondbacks are poised to be a legitimate threat. Like Corbin Carroll, you have to admit, you'd have to believe would be like a little bit better. What happened in the second half is more likely than what happened in the first half. You know what I mean? So you have to assume that that trend continues upward. And I just think that they are just a more healthy franchise at this point. And that stuff matters in my eyes. I know that like San Diego might have like the image of like more top tier talent, but if you're trying to trade Cease and King, if either one of those things happen, like you can kind of forget about it. That's sort of them, especially like if they have to. You said they might trade Machado. I mean, that would just be like admission that they have to like reset here and get their.
I think it's happening, dude. I really think it's gonna happen.
I mean, it would be insane, but you know. Like in terms of other teams here, like could the Padres trade Dylan Cease to like the Phillies or the Braves? And then those guys become, you know, then I think those teams are all of a sudden like legitimate fucking like threats to the Dodgers.
I almost feel like the Padres won't trade these stars to other NL teams just for the fear of maybe facing them in the playoffs. Because I really like, you know, maybe Cease to the Mets, you know, or King to the Mets. But I just kind of feel like they won't do that. However, I'm trying to think of what AL team would be in the market to make a move like that. And I don't.
Orioles.
It would make sense for the Orioles who are trying to save money, but it just doesn't seem like that's.
They don't want to do another one-year rental thing, too. They just did the one-year rental for Burns, and then they lost him.
Yeah.
And it's like it cost them a lot. So
I feel like Toronto is maybe the only team motivated enough to make a move like that. And I think they could be a good fit for each other.
Houston, depending, maybe Houston at the deadline if they're playing well, if they're like in the contention for the division. Rangers are definitely an option. Don't forget about them. I think the Rangers are like one of those teams that's like. People are kind of sleeping on a little bit in the American
League.
A
little bit.
Yeah.
What about, I mentioned the Blue Jays. What do you think about Scherzer going to the Jays? Is that a needle mover for you?
I mean, I think he was bad. Like, wasn't he kind of bad when he was?
Yeah, I saw a little.
He was like 40. I don't know. I just legend, but. No, not really. I feel like that's a signing that only the Blue Jays were going to make because they lost out on so many free agents. They were just like, give us a big name or a living, breathing organism that we can give some money to.
Basically. Yeah, I feel like they – there was a meme that I saw that was like, oh, I'm going to give the Jays fans the best five starts they've ever seen, dude.
Right.
Like Max Scherzer.
No, the Blue Jays are in a weird spot. And I don't know. I think that like all in all, I think we sort of like tackled this subject pretty well. But I would say that like I'm not so concerned about other teams making moves because I still think that no matter what move they make, the Dodgers will have the roster to withstand any team.
Yeah,
it's all going to be health and performance.
Yeah, really you heard a lot of people talking shit in the 2023 offseason that the Dodgers aren't doing anything, and that are 22, right? And then 23 is when they signed Shohei, and then 24 was when they signed fucking, or no, whatever, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I get after 23,
a lot of people talking shit. Now it's like, oh, you're ruining baseball, blah, blah, blah. We got five teams that haven't spent a dollar this offseason. That's horrible. And it's leaving a bad taste in a lot of baseball fans' mouths. Going back to the Padres Fan Fest, speaking of bad taste in his mouth, speaking on the Roky Sasaki courting, Jackson Merrill said that he no longer wants to eat raw fish ever again. Obviously talking about sushi, Roky Sasaki's favorite dish. Yeah. You know, some people were jumping on him like, oh, how is that not racist? It's definitely not racist. He's just fucking frustrated. I get it. If you went out courting some guy with every intention of getting him to sign with you to take down those damn Dodgers who fucking just keep spitting in your eye. But
He wouldn't have made those comments if they got Roky, by the way. Like,
definitely not.
I think Yeah, I think he just was trying to be funny, and it just was like one of those comments that, like, didn't land well. Whatever.
Yeah, I think it probably landed well in San Diego, but outside everybody's like, "Oh, you fuck." But yeah. I think it's a bad taste in their mouth. You know, like a lot of things. There's a lot of turmoil with their ownership. I think the brothers, the late owner Peter Seidler's brothers, that are now, you know, in a legal dispute with his wife, Shell, what, I forget her name, last name. But they're saying now that she was taking money out of his accounts while he was, you know, in the hospital, like on his deathbed. And it's getting really ugly over there, dude. So it's kind of illuminating why maybe Roki wouldn't want to sign a 6-year deal, basically, with an organization that's in flux and oof.
No, I mean, it's weird because for a while, you know, the Dodgers were really giving the Padres like their flower for being,
yeah,
being like the scariest team that they faced all year. But like, what a difference it makes to like be up 2-1 in the NLDS and then just go 24 scoreless innings, get bounced. All of a sudden you're in financial turmoil. All of a sudden it's all falling apart. You can't get a free agent. You don't spend a dime. The Dodgers beat you out on Sasaki. All this stuff happens. And then you sign Tanner Scott, who was the Padres' best reliever, who the Padres gave up fucking like three of their top 10 draft picks or five draft picks, or sorry, three of their top five prospects or 10. Was it three of their top five?
I think it was 10. Three of their top five. Yeah.
Yeah. And to get him, and now they don't have him, and now he's on the Dodgers. And it's just like, what a difference it all makes, you know, just like a few months makes. And then, like, here we are. The Dodgers just announced that the first time that they're facing the Padres in June, on June 16th, they're doing the Blake Snell bobblehead. On June 17th, they're doing the World Series replica trophy. On June 18th, they're doing the World Series gold player jerseys for the fans. These are the giveaways. So they're doing it the first time they face the Padres. This is the pettiest thing I've ever seen the Dodgers do. I've never seen them do this, and I genuinely think it's revenge for putting the crying Kershaw meme up on the scoreboard at Petco Park, and for, you know, Manny throwing the baseball at Dave Roberts, you know, Jerks and Profar trolling the fans, which was fun. Dodger fans should not have reacted the way they did. I do not condone it, but what I'm saying is like, you reap what you sow in this world, and now the Dodgers are acting very petty about it. They are being sore winners, and I'm fucking all for it.
Fucking A, dude. You took the words right out of my mouth, man.
Yeah.
If you didn't touch on it, I was going to slam it. That crying Kershaw meme, dude. The Dodgers took that personal, and you can see it now, dude, just looking at that trail of destruction left behind that it's so eloquently laid out for us, Jess.
Dueling PR departments, dude. The Dodgers PR versus the Padres PR going at it right now. You know,
it is a thing of beauty. I mean, dude.
What hurts more? Is it the World Series? It has to be the World Series, right? Yeah, it's not Blake Snell, right? The Blake Snell bobblehead doesn't.
Not Blake Snell, because he already went to the Giants.
They should have done Tanner Scott. They should have done Tanner Scott.
Tanner Scott's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It does feel like this was very strategic, right? This does feel like a slam dunk, kicking them when they're down, if you will, Jess. You remember after the division series, I was trying to take the high road and not kick them when they're down, and boy, did you enjoy it, man.
Oh, no,
you got a couple of rib shots.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a very I don't know. I think it's a very big turning point in San Diego. I have given them a ton of credit for spending and making big trades and doing what they need to do to make San Diego a destination for players. And they've done that. But it kind of feels like without Peter Seidler's drive to bring a championship to San Diego, that it may be the turning of a page and an end of an era. And I hope we don't go back to, you know, basically the Rays West, where it's just Moneyball overall. But, you know, The Padres had they set attendance records, ticket sales records, revenue records last season. So the money's there. And let us not forget, Jess, that the MLB made a record $12.1 billion last season. The most revenue ever recorded for the MLB. And we have five major clubs that have not spent a dollar. So,
and they're collecting bits of that revenue. Yep.
And we can talk about the Dodgers ruining baseball all the time, but they're lining these other billionaire owners' pockets. Teams like the Yankees, the Mets, and the Dodgers are literally lining the pockets of John Fisher's A's and maybe the Colorado Rockies. Some other teams that don't seem really interested in investing back into their product and into their fans' experience,
and,
unfortunately.
And for all of you fucking fans out there, that talk about the salary cap is what we need to like fix this issue. Dumb. Just go look at what's happening in the NFL right now, which is a salary cap league. And the guess who's back in the Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles, who was just the matchup from a few years back. And Kansas City's in there. What, the fifth time in 6 years, you know, it's like, everybody hates what's happening in the NFL right now, and it's a salary cap league, dude. Like,
yeah,
the NFL is rigged. It's a salary cap league. So, like, it, you know, fine, make it a salary cap. The same shit's gonna happen. And, you know, it's just look no further than like where we're at with the Padres. You know, sometimes you need a good businessman to run the operation, right? And the problem with the Padres is like, this is the problem with the family business. You let the brothers come in, or the ex-wife, or the widow come in. They're not as business savvy or as strategic as the person who got them there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, it's just, you're going to end up in situations like this. This is why like what the Dodgers have is so healthy, because it's like a truly collaborative team of people. There's no family dynasty involved, but.
Do you hear that, Frank McCourt?
Yeah.
Fuck.
So with all that being said, we'll end it here. You know,
hold
speaking
on,
of players, not.
Yeah, no, gonna... just to your point. Sorry, I just wanted to nail it since we were talking about guys that, you know, got there, but whatever, you know, still a couple of Boris guys looking for a home, dude. And
yeah.
Jess, do you think this is maybe a representative not having his player's best interest at hand and just trying to get the most dollar overall? Or do you think maybe this is a little fatigue after working on the Juan Soto deal? I mean,
I think
Steve
that's
Cohen,
easily what it is. That's easily what it is. Yeah, go ahead. I know what you're going to say.
Steve
yeah.
Cohen, you know, came out and said that this Pete Alonso negotiation has been way more difficult than negotiating with Pete. If you guys will go back in time with me to last season, a couple of notable stars, Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, weren't signed until fucking spring training. And now we're getting to a point where it looks like Alex Bregman and Pete Alonso are going to suffer the same fate.
Jack Flaherty
as well. You know,
that's not
a Boris guy.
Point. Yeah.
But I almost feel like Jack's getting a little punished now for being a part of the evil empire and having some comments about owners not spending. But Jack was on Foul Territory a week or so ago talking about how they're just, the phone's not even ringing.
Yeah.
Kike talked about this the season before, about the offers came at the same time and then not at all. Talking about a little collusion amongst owners. And it does feel like maybe there is a little backroom deals going on where maybe owners are deciding, hey, we're not going to spend. We're not going to play this game with the Dodgers. And we're going to actually use them as a scapegoat. It's not us not spending. It's them spending so much. Who's left? And, you know, we don't got to really beat our brains up to look at it. Like, dude, guys like Kirby Yates aren't signed in January. Yeah. Guys like Tanner Scott still aren't signed in January. You're telling me fucking any other ball club couldn't make these offers? And let's not forget, dude, like, I still got to go back to the Freeman contract. Yeah, he deferred like $50 million, but it was like $166 million. And the hangup was that sixth year for a lot of clubs. They wanted to be on five. So that's why the Braves pivoted Matt Olson, and a little bit younger, a little bit cheaper, had a little bit better of a season that year. And it's like, dude, if you're not going to have loyalty to a 12-year veteran of your franchise, who are you going to have loyalty to? So, you know, that's not to throw the Braves or, you know, Alex Anthopoulos under the bus, but, you know, there was a lot more to do with it with, you know, Freddie's agent apparently and shit. But these are the kind of things that leave sour tastes in players' mouths that then, you know, kind of avoid clubs because of it.
Right. And I think that, like, with a guy that's like league wide culturally, like, it's just like a sort of, it's almost like a hive mind situation going on with owners where they're sort of all like, they're all on the same page with it mentally. And then it just, and it starts bleeding into their politics. It starts, or to their acumen, the way that they manage the teams. And then I think a guy like Boris, to go back to him, probably ruffles their feathers so much more at times like these because of the way that he operates, because he's so pro player in the way to a fault at times. It's obviously for selfish reasons, but it's like, it's excessively pro player to the point where, like, there's just like, I'm going to fucking drag this out as long as I can and exhaust you in negotiations is sort of what Boris does. And if teams aren't willing to spend money at all, they're not willing to play this game very often.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys like Bregman and you see like Snell come off the board. The Dodgers wouldn't normally sign a Boris client, but they kind of just took advantage of a situation where, like, that specifically, I think Boris was just like, he needed a win with Blake Snell because of what happened last offseason, right?
Yeah.
Alonso and Bregman they're the fresh free agents after Soto. So, like, it says a lot to me about where we're at, the fact that, like, he still can't get them a contract, you know, after the big wins with Snell and Soto.
Yeah.
It says to me, like, the two teams willing to spend got the Boris clients off the board. And now his other two clients can't get anybody to sign them because he's trying to go to teams that aren't willing to spend. And it's like, it says a lot about where the industry is, especially when it pertains to Scott Boris. So
it makes me wonder though, too, dude, do you think that maybe some of that stink from 17 is still on Bregman? You know what I mean?
Probably a little bit for some teams. Yeah. Like, you know, he would like the Yankees, I would imagine, probably don't want to sign Bregman for that reason, you know?
Yeah. And like, I don't know. It just kind of trips me out. I feel like a team like the Cubs or a team like the Reds could really use like a Jack Flaherty.
Well, you saw that the Reds were trying to trade for Luis Robert too, right?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, but why? Yeah, but, you know, like, yeah, why, no, I mean, why Lou Rob?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, but like, it seems like the Reds like want to compete, but they still like balked at certain like prospect. I don't know. It's just weird. It's a weird situation all across the board in baseball.
I mean, you remember the Reds ownership that those pretty shitty comments a couple years ago talking about like, where are they gonna go? Like, we're the only team in town, you know, like, who are you gonna root for? And it's like,
deal with
that's
it.
Tough. Kind of thing. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously they got the Bengals, but like, I don't know, dude. I'd like to see Joe Burrow, dude, throw a couple innings, dude, fucking Reds uniform. That'd be sick. That'd be super sick. But Jess, I asked you last episode, where do you think Bregman, Flaherty, and Alonso end up?
Well, you changed my mind a little bit on the Angels here. I know that they're like a possibility to get in the mix because, you know, they'll just take the scraps at this point. But apparently Bregman's out on Boston. That seems like less of a chance now. So it might not be like I'll predict this. I don't know where anybody's going to go, but I think there's going to be a team we don't expect sign one of those guys. That's what I'll say. A surprise.
Interesting.
You know, like the Diamondbacks signing Corbin Burns, something like that, where it's going to be a surprise team that nobody was expecting. But I think the other ones are a little bit more predictable. Like, you know, either Alonso goes back to the Mets or the Blue Jays or the Angels, I would say.
Man. So
maybe the Angels are the surprise team.
They're a big surprise to me, dude, how shitty they've been forever, Jess. But my gosh, bud, look at that. We burned through it all. It's always a blast being here with you, Jess. Did you want to say anything, dude? Was there anything you wanted to add? I know last week was like the 20-year anniversary of that Bright Eyes album, and I'm sure you've been kind of going through a lot of emo stuff. What is that one that had like, this is the
Fevers and Mirrors.
I knew you would knew that, you emo bitch, dude. Yep. That was a huge album for you, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a big deal in my life, dude. That was a big deal.
If you were a pro ball player, dude, and you were coming out to one Bright Eyes song for your walk-up song, what Bright Eyes song are you choosing?
Oh, it's a good question.
This is taking way too long.
Road to Joy.
Love it, dude.
Yeah. So
there right, you bro. Go. There you have it, everybody. That's been another episode of Deferred Collusion. With you as always, I'm Brandon Bollinger. This is my guy, Jesse James, the gun, Roe. Please like us, subscribe to us. Add some comments if you feel like you want to talk a little shit. I know I was getting flamed in the comment section last episode, Jesse, for interrupting you a little too much. Had his coffee and I was firing tanks, dude.
You were out of control last week, brother.
But man, it was just all that Dodger hate, dude.
I know.
In the trenches. But hey, it's been another beautiful episode. I love getting to talk ball with you. Until next time, Jess, Deferred Collusion. Out.
Let's go, Luca.